Listen to the voices of our world.
The American capital punishment system simply isn't fair in its administration, and that's the real issue.
Honorable people disagree about whether you should execute the guilty, but who can argue about executing the innocent?
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm Eileen Bott. There are 16 men and 2 women who share a life-or-death interest in your opinion, particularly if you stay tuned till the end of this program. Those 18 people are scheduled to be executed between now and December 1st, 2004, and today's show looks at death penalty issues. In recent years, 145 persons on death row have been found innocent, some within hours of their scheduled execution, and many have been freed due to results of post-conviction DNA testing. So, can we make sure that we never mistakenly kill someone innocent? Today we'll be joined by the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Dead Man Walking, Sister Helen Prejean, an internationally known law professor and author of Actual Innocence, attorney Barry Scheck.
So what happens when the heart just stops? Stops caring for anyone? The hollow in your chest dries up and you stop believing.
3 days left. 3 days is all that's left of me. All that's left to me. How many breaths is that? How many meals left? How many showers? Eye blinks. Sneezes. Toilet flushes. How many thoughts do I have left? Should I stop counting?
If you had 3 days left, what would you be thinking? James Hudson can't tell us. On August 18th, James became the 924th person to be executed in the United States since the Supreme Court's 1976 decision to allow states to reinstate the death penalty. There are about 3,500 people nationwide on death row right now, and as I mentioned moments ago, 18 are set to die in the next 3 months. But the ever-improving availability of DNA testing has opened many questions, a few jail cell doors, and for some, rocked our hardcore devotion to the death penalty. There has never been a time in our history when so many convictions in capital cases have been overturned, 145 persons exonerated. Former Illinois Governor George Ryan vacated the death sentences of 167 men to avoid the unthinkable possibility that the state might murder an innocent person. Why so many wrongful convictions? Why have 38% of all executions in the last 10 years taken place in Texas? In fact, 27 of the last 39 executions took place in southern states, and the death penalty is most often requested when the victim is white and the accused is indigent and a member of a minority. In June 2002, the Supreme Court ruled against any further executions of mentally retarded persons. But death row inmate Ricky Ray Rector purposely left half a pecan pie aside that he intended to polish off when his execution was over. Dobie Gillis Williams, one of the 5 inmates Sister Helen Prejean has accompanied to the death chamber, and one of the 2 men she writes about in her new book, had an IQ of 63. The other man Helen writes of in Death of Innocence, an eyewitness account of wrongful executions, is Joseph O'Dell. Helen wrote a letter to the Pope, in part about Joseph. She told John Paul that church language had provided U.S. district attorneys with an excuse to seek executions. Section 2266 of the Catholic Catechism, stating the church upholds the state's right to execute for grave or grievous crimes, has since been deleted. Sister Helen Prejean.
All killing of human beings is wrong. All of it is. And you don't make these distinctions with adjectives like heinous, terrible, cruel, atrocious. And that's what's happened in our courts. And in this book, I take on Antonin Scalia, this good Catholic Supreme Court justice. And you're not going to believe, in the providence of God, he goes duck hunting with my brother Louis in Louisiana.
And Dick Cheney.
And Dick Cheney. My brother Louis was right in the middle of all these duck hunts. I said, Louis, do you know who he is? I mean, Louis, you know, he rubber stamps all these death cases. And he goes, sis, he says, we don't talk about all that court stuff. We just hunt. And then I meet Justice Scalia in the airport. And of course, it's just a very dramatic way to open up the chapter on constitutional discourse. And I'm only a citizen. I'm not even a lawyer. But citizens can read the Constitution. And we know what human rights are. And we know torture when we see it. In Dobie's story, he was brought into the death house 3 times before they killed him. The first time he was an hour away from death, he got a stay of execution. Bring him back to his cell for a month. Then he's brought back into the execution chamber. The phone rings, another legal question, gets a stay of execution. By the time they brought him to be killed, he was so tired, he just wanted it over.
There was another execution this morning.
Where?
In Texas. Yeah.
1/3 of all U.S. executions happen in Texas. 12 southern states that practice slavery, the Jim Crow laws, the longest. It's to control black people. And the Supreme Court can fiddle with guidelines all they want. When you enter culture, the law is a human institution. 8 out of every 10 people on death row are there because they kill white people. But in the South, the culture takes over. Since the year 2000, when all the cases started being made known of the innocent people, there's a decline in most of the country in actual executions and death sentences, except the South. And in 2003, 89% of the executions were in these 12 states, and Texas is the king. And see, the Texans say, well, we just are assertive. Everybody should be following the law. We just follow it. And there's a part of that that's right. They can say, we're within the law. The Constitution says you can execute people. But the Constitution also says in the Bill of Rights that people are supposed to have certain constitutional protections like good defense, like due process, like equal justice under law, like a jury of your peers, a fair and impartial jury. And Dobie Gillis Williams looks out, a black man on trial for supposedly murdering a white woman, and he sees an all-white jury. And every court in this land, all the way up to the Supreme Court, said his constitutional rights and protections were upheld.
One of the things about today's case that struck me was this fellow, Kelsey Patterson, had an IQ of 73.
Wow.
And was a paranoid schizophrenic.
Oh, wow. Isn't that unspeakable?
And in this case, I read this today, that in Texas, there is no life without parole.
Yeah. Guess who defeats that whenever it goes to the legislature? Guess. The district attorneys. You know why? It's their bargaining chip. Picture the basement of the police office where they've arrested somebody. And they're there, and they're with the DA and the detective, and they're alone. And they say to them, unless you confess, we're going to give you the death penalty. No recordings, but they have that as the threat, and they get people to confess. They don't want to give it up. And that's why the district attorneys in Texas don't want to have life without parole. 35 of the 38 states that have the death penalty have life without parole sentences, and that's part of the trend, too. More and more juries are opting to give people life sentences instead of death. And you know what I've found out? Being with the American public, because I do like 140, 150 talks a year around this country during these last 15 years, the American people are good. They're decent. They just really don't know very much about the death penalty. And when you take them there, when you say, look, here's the alternative waiting for us tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. We don't have to execute anybody. We can be safe. That's the Pope's argument. Prisons. Modern societies have a way to incapacitate dangerous people so that you don't have to kill them anymore. And people go for it. They go, yeah, well, I didn't know it was like that, or I didn't know less than 2% of all the people who commit murders are selected to die, and they're all poor, and almost all of them have killed white people, and many of them are mentally retarded or mentally ill or psychotic. They don't know those things.
There was a court somewhere in the South, I think it was Virginia, they ruled that you could actually medicate a psychotic individual in order to make them well enough to execute them.
I'm telling you, we're getting into Kafka. This is Kafka-esque stuff. See, because the Supreme Court said you can't kill an insane person. Well, all right. So we'll medicate you with antipsychotic drugs to make you sane enough so that then we can kill you. And the lawyers that get caught in this, here's their client on death row. He's mentally ill. if the lawyer fights to get him medication so that he's not crazy, it could mean he's killed. The cure that kills, they called it. I mean, that's so incredible. We can't handle the death penalty. We don't know how to apply it. We have guidelines that don't work. Culture takes over. And so it's time to put it down. And the American people are ready to put it down. And Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun finally dissented and said, I'll no longer tinker with the machinery of death, because he could see that what the Supreme Court did was they enacted procedural bars and protections to protect themselves. And so they were doing things like, sorry, filed your petition one day late. Up, didn't keep the rules. Joseph Odell's petition was turned down in a federal court where at last he's going to have a federal hearing. The lawyers mistyped a word on the cover page of the motion, and the courts refused to look at it. The attorney general of the state was talking with the attorney, and the attorney said, oh, God, I realize I made this mistake. And he goes, oh, it won't make a difference in the courts. That's just a typographical error. But when it came down to it, that one word did make a difference. And Joseph Odell, the man who was on Virginia's death row for 12 years, trying to get one full evidentiary hearing where he could get a special DNA test that had just come, and they did not let him get it. They executed him, and then Virginia destroyed the DNA evidence so it could never be tested. But Joseph was made an honorary citizen of Palermo. 5 million people in Italy stayed by their radios that night to hear what happened to Joseph Odell. The mayor of Palermo came and made Joseph an honorary citizen. And when Joseph was executed, Italy claimed his body, and he was buried in a very special place of honor in Palermo.
What was Joseph's connection with Italy?
Well, that's a good question. Italians are passionate about human rights. They suffered terribly in World War II. They're wonderful people. What happened is this young woman, Laurie Ehrs, was a volunteer at Centurion Ministries, one of these innocence projects, goes in as a volunteer, mountain of letters, picks Joseph Odell's, begins to look into the case, goes, I think this guy is innocent. Then she began to fight for him. She called me and said, would you come be part of a press conference? You know, the little Susan Sarandon connection thing, yeah, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I said, sure. And then there was an article written, and a member of the Italian parliament, Luciano Neri, who was a member of the Human Rights Commission of their parliament, sees a little bitty article, must have been 10 lines, about this Joseph Odell. He comes over and he meets with lawyers and he begins to find out about the case. They bring a whole delegation over. The Italian parliament passes a resolution. The Pope speaks out. They all know the name of Joseph Odell. The people of Italy, the children wrote to him. He had a whole bag of letters in his cell before he was executed, and they allowed me to be in the execution chamber with him, and I could put my hand on his shoulder. And part of my final prayer was, Joseph, Christ is with you. The people of Italy are all with you. You know, it was part of the love surrounding him before he died.
Should life without parole be an option in all capital cases? Log on to the Voices of Our World webpage, www.maryknoll.org/voices. There's a spot there for your feedback. I'm Eileen Bott, and you're listening to Voices of Our World. You can call us at 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-877-MARYKNOLL.